Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 14th of November, Anno Domini 2009, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, a few things you can lose, nothing to choose, because we are the member drive is over for now. We want to thank... From the bottom of my heart, I want to thank each and every one of you who pledged, who became a member during that drive. We beat our goal by over $500, and it was you folks who did it. Your generosity, your kindness, your willingness to become a member of the Jazz 90.1 and Soundbites families. And for each of you, I really want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. It was a wonderful thing that you did.
Well, from all of us. I mean, yep. You know, Nick, you know, without them, you know, and their great support, I mean, the three of us still wouldn't be here.
That's exactly right. So we want to thank you all very much. And let me read this first announcement, and then we'll get right to the phone. So, hot on the heels of a reported hijacking of hundreds of Facebook groups, a new variation on an old worm is crawling its way into the social network's walls. Attackers have released an updated, more intelligent version of the notorious Kube Face virus, security analysts say, and anyone could become its next victim. First, the hijacking. An organization called Control Your Info apparently took control of as many as 300 Facebook groups this past week. Members added their own logo onto the pages, announcing they'd hijacked the groups and providing a link back to their own site. Facebook maintains that no confidential information was ever exposed. The affected group's representatives say we're abandoned and open for any member to take over. The Control Your Info website states that the organization's mission was to expose security holes in social media, a fitting segue to today's new threat. The new threat has a familiar name, Kube Face, which, by the way, is an anagram for the word Facebook. Not much of an anagram. It first popped up in mid-2008 and has been pestering users ever since. The worm typically works by taking over your PC, then sending messages or wall postings to your friends. The messages include links to what appear to be funny videos or risque photos of people you and your friends know. Anyone who follows the links, however, will ultimately end up infected with the malware themselves, usually by way of a bogus software update that pops up on the screen. The updated Kube Face variation, according to the virus-fighting team at Trend Micro, takes things a step further by automating the entire process. Instead of depending solely on real accounts to spread the malicious links, the attackers have found a way to have bots do their bidding. Botnets are registering new Facebook accounts, confirming them via accompanying Gmail addresses. The zombie accounts then join Facebook groups, add friends, and post dangerous links onto people's walls. The system is even advanced enough to monitor maximum friend levels, Facebook has maximum friend levels, and avoid drawing attention to the ill-intended accounts. So what can you do to keep yourself safe? The steps are nothing you haven't heard before. Keep your antivirus software up to date. Use some common sense. Antivirus software will alert you if you click onto a site that's known to host malware, and that's exactly where these Kube Face links want to take you. The easiest way to stay safe, then, is just to be cautious in choosing what you click. And I'm not just talking about you Windows people. Yes, Kube Face is a Windows-only virus. But you Mac people have friends who are not as tech savvy as you are, nor as clearly intelligent and brilliant as you are. So if you're running antivirus software, you can tell them if you run into one of these things. The same is true of our Linux friends, who are all super geniuses, we know. But if you are running this antivirus software, you will be able to get that announcement, laugh at it yourself, and then tell all your other Facebook friends, hey, look, don't go here because it's a problem. So our poll of the week.
You're just an equal opportunity offender today, aren't you?
I am. I will offend anybody. I can do that without any.
What is it? I'm a repeat offender. Hesitation. I repeat. I will offend again.
Yes.
Bada bing. He's on it again at 11, folks. Try the veal.
Exactly. So what you need to do right now Of course, I'm vamping while I plug in my mouse. There we go. We have a poll, and the poll is, are you worried about the Coop face virus? And the choices are, I worry about every virus, I don't have a Facebook account, so I pretend I'm safe, and I'm going commando, baby. The return of the I'm going commando choice is here today. So far, we have 45 votes, and 47% of you, because you are smart people, worry about every virus. Only 12 of you, 27% of you, are going commando. So that's great. Now, I know that just clicking on a button is not enough for you. So underneath the poll, you will see a yellow box. If you click on Give Us Your Opinion, it will take you to my website at AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And once you're there, you'll be able to enter your opinion. Today's question, of course, have you heard of or seen anyone hit by Coop face? We've already got people who are being rude to each other. I'll be taking those out again because I'm tired of rude people. I'm the only one allowed to be rude here.
Well, it's your forum.
It's my website.
Yeah.
I'll do what I want and nobody else can. So,
and you have the microphone.
And I have the microphone and I own the website. So that's the way we're going to play that game. But please do that. Please take a look around the website. I have forums and newsletters. You can search all my old newsletters. That alone is worth $15 a year. I can't imagine you not wanting to do that. So do that and then come back and join us here at Sound Bites as we go to the phones. Our first caller is Ernesto. Welcome, Ernesto.
Hi.
Where are you calling from?
Parrington.
Parrington. Is it Ernesto or Ernesto?
Ernesto Rubinello. Ernesto.
Ernesto. All right.
Yeah. Listen, I'm having trouble with Outlook in terms of every time I load, it comes up and gets some messages. Everything is being deleted and thrown into spam. I'm not sure. And I have Trend Micro Security. I put that on the least. The minimum security, it still, knocks out everything, when I'm getting messages from different folks or businesses or whatever. How do I change the program from deleting everything and putting it to spam? I barely get any messages on the inbox.
All right, a couple questions. First, are you on Outlook or Outlook Express?
No, Outlook from 2007.
Okay, and are you connected to a company somewhere?
No, just Time Warner. This is at home.
All right. You may have your,
Well, and I just found one for 2003. Select actions from the toolbar.
There it is.
Select junk email. Mm-hmm. In the junk email options tab, you can lower the level of junk email that it thinks it's sending or that it will pick on.
But if it's already blocking it.
Yeah, and then you may have to reset.
He might have to do a reset, so he's going to have to teach it to relearn.
Right, forgets all of those ones that it already thought were junk.
Right.
Okay.
But yeah,
go into actions and try to do something with junk email.
Right. Go into actions, look in junk email. There's two sets of things you can do. One is to lower the sensitivity.
Uh-huh.
It sounds like it's on high.
Yeah.
And lowering it means that more things will not be tagged as spam, which is what you're looking for.
Uh-huh.
Most people leave it at medium, and that seems to handle it a lot better.
Uh-huh.
Then you can go in and blacklist. There's also a blacklist that says, this is definitely spam.
Okay.
Dump everything that's in there. Kill that whole mm-hmm. section, and then you can slowly build it back up again with things that get past the filter that really are spam.
Okay.
Because 10-to-1 odds, I found that true. The junk file gets so big anyways, and, quite often those email addresses that you're getting spam with are there for a little bit, and then they wind up literally leaving those and coming up with new names so they can redo you. So it doesn't hurt once in a while to flush it and retrain.
Right.
Okay.
Is the camera not working?
Should be.
All right, guys, thanks.
All right. Thank you, Ernesto.
Thank you, Ernesto.
It froze.
Ah, the camera froze. The doctor is in he's in the IRC chat, and he asked us, what about the camera? And I said, I thought it was working. All right, so that's a lot of people are finding that new email things are tripping the spam filters, you know,
the spammers are getting smarter.
Right. And so the spam filters are trying to get smarter as well. And unfortunately, they're taking a little bit of tweaking before they actually get there, you know. So it's not as easy as it sounds to filters. What?
I just posted a link for configuring the junk settings in Outlook 2007.
Very nice.
Do we have the link on there for the camera?
Yes. Yes, we now do.
Oh, boy. Now we got to really watch what we're doing.
I think we do. Hold on. I put it in there, but I'm going to check it anyway.
Yeah. Again, you know, we just got to, I can't say it enough, though. You know, reaching our goal so soon. I mean, Rob was so pleased that I guess, you know, in previous years, you know, it's taken a little bit longer. But given the economic times right now, that all the Jazz members came out and, you know, really supported it so great.
Yeah,
I just can't get over it.
We're very, very pleased. We haven't yet beaten the polka guys.
Although there was a little sign on the bulletin board that the polka guys, us, and one other, three shows, were among the top draws.
We are among the top draws, and we're very happy. We're very, very happy. All right, Steve's working at getting the camera up and running.
It's back.
Yeah, and Doc says no. All right, our next caller is Linda. Linda, where are you calling from?
You know I'm calling.
Oh, I know you're calling from Greece. All right, there we go. Well, until I hear your voice, I don't necessarily know. Linda, you slipped your second today.
Oh, geez, you know, look, I can't always be first.
Okay, I guess not. What can we do to make you a happy woman?
Okay, I just want to thank you for reaching your goal. And last week, now I know this is going to, I don't know how this is going to sound, but last week I had a choice of getting something out or subscribing to you guys. So I gave you $35. And I thought to myself, look at how much money I saved on computer repairs. When asking you guys, I must have saved $500-$600. So I figured $35 was well worth it.
God bless you. See that? Thank you so much. We're very, very appreciative.
Thank you.
That's what we love to see. We're very happy.
I mean, you know, I call you guys up and you tell me how to do it over the phone. Otherwise, I would have to come to Dave or my friend. And I mean, I don't mind spending money for Dave, but if I could do it for free, I'd do it for free.
And even a lot of the computer companies, you call them for support. You know, it's $35 an incident,
uh-huh,
or $2.99 a minute, or
yep.
Don't, you know.
Did you see the Dogbert tech support call this week? Yank out your phone, you know, buried in lead, and
yeah. So I really couldn't afford it, but I thought to myself, well, now I'm weighing upon how much computer support I've gotten over the years, and that's why I did it.
God bless you, Linda. Thank you so much.
Yes, I.
That's what we keep saying. So thank you so much.
I mean, I don't have a question. It's just I wanted to say that.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Linda.
Okay, bye.
Have a great weekend. See that, ladies and gentlemen?
That's
another satisfied customer. That's what we do here. We make people happy by giving all our computer knowledge to you, and just a couple of times a year we ask in return, and you folks stepped up to the plate. So thanks to each and every one of you who became a member. I can't tell you how warm and fuzzy that makes me feel.
And we should remind folks to call right now with their computer questions, and they can reach us at?
The numbers are 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, if you're outside the 585 area code, as so many of our listeners are, 1-800-790-0415. And you can easily get to us either of those ways. We know we have people listening in Canada and just all over the place on the stream.
Well, we had one call from, Louisiana.
Yep.
We had one call from North Carolina, Nebraska. We should do a little. I got to do a little map.
I told you I'm ready to do a map. I just need to.
Yeah.
We have a map.
Frapper.
We have the Frapper map.
Yeah,
map Frapper. Mapper.
We got to get folks to go get to there and start a fresh one.
Yep.
We should start a fresh one to, get that up and folks that call in be able to put the pins there and see where our listeners are reaching out to, because it's quite a range.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Oh, and Bob in the IRC chat says, and you guys cover questions across the entire spectrum, hardware, Windows, Mac, Linux, everything. Doctor added iPhone, Droid.
Where to get your coffee.
Doc says, of course, if they missed the last shows, they could still contribute today because you can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. You can always do that and tell them it's for sound bites, and they'll be happy.
They'll always be glad to, and you know, it just helps because once we come, you know, for when is it? I think it's April or so. I forget when the next fundraiser. Whatever.
Start. All right. This is your job as a sound bites listener. Whether you're listening live or you're listening to the podcast or you join us on Friday nights, here's your job. You put away $1 a week. So that next time we have a drive, you've got your $35.
Bingo.
Or more, 60, whatever, about $35. And you'll have your pledge money set aside so you can become a member. And don't forget, if you are a member, you can use your membership card for discounts at many, many places, including NYPC. So there's all that good stuff that it can do. So we hope that you all join. We hope you all become members. We thank you all so much for your support. It's great.
I got to do one little mini rant, short one. Again, just to encourage folks. I know I tell this story and it's, you know, folks laugh at it, but it's the truth. When I pick up the phone and answer the phone.
Yeah.
I have to whisper, but you don't. I have to get my ear down close so I can hear you folks. So please, don't be afraid. Just because I'm speaking low. Yes, I have to. You don't.
Right. One of the things that normally happens, for those of you who've never been inside a radio station, and you're the lucky ones, generally what happens is the person on the control board, which Rob never wanted to be called the guy on the dials, he always wanted to be called the producer, usually is in a separate room from the people on air so that he or she can speak, you know, and if they're answering phones, they can say, hi, thanks for calling Soundbites, what's your question? Dave is both running the board and on the show and answering the phones.
I wonder what my title is then.
You're Dave, that's your title.
Thank you.
Doc. Dr. Dave. And there's no, this, of course, this station was never designed for call-in shows. We are the first.
He took
a big risk. Mm-hmm. And the reason we didn't jump on the air immediately here was because he spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to get those calls in. And so consequently, Dave has to take the calls here in the station. And even though he pots his mic down, he's still got to whisper because our mics will pick him up. So he has to whisper, you don't. But we have our next caller who is Vito. Mm-hmm. No, we don't.
We'll come to him right after the break.
We're going to come to Vito right after the break. I apologize, Vito. Hang on there. I promise you. We're going to be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Vito, who's on the phone, and all of you. We want to thank you, members and non-members alike, for listening to us for over 20 years. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites on Jazz 90.1. Back in just a minute.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites, celebrating 20 years.
The Jazz 90.1 member card is more than just a card. It's our way of thanking you for supporting Jazz 90.1. Because in return, you can save money all year long by showing your Jazz 90.1 member card for discounts at fine local member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bob Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Small World Bakery, Sound Source, and Tuxedo Corner, Irondequoit and Gates locations. So carry your Jazz 90.1 member card and show it when you shop. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ, and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 welcomes our newest member card businesses, Enright PC Management and Holland Music Studios.
This is Station Manager Rob Linton thanking you for becoming a member or renewing your membership to Jazz 90.1. Because of you, we'll continue to broadcast great jazz music you've come to expect, as well as continuing our online streaming. live studio concerts, and special programs you can't hear anywhere else. If you've not yet made that pledge of support to Jazz 90.1, you still have time. You can pledge securely online at jazz901.org or by calling 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. You can browse and select from the great thank you gifts we're offering at the various donation levels like CDs and DVDs and great Jazz 90.1 clothing items online. Thank you for supporting your jazz station. Member supported, Jazz 90.1.
Hey, this is Derek Lucas, host of The Spectrum. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. Give us a call. The numbers are 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or outside the 585 area code, it's toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. Just like Vito did. Vito, where are you calling from?
Cheektowaga, New York.
Cheektowaga. What can we do for you?
Well, recently I got myself a 8-gig flash drive, and I'd like to take advantage of the features, the, you know, X2 or X3 file system, but of course Windows, you know, they don't read those so well, but there are drivers out for it, so what I would wanted to do was create a small, you know, VFAT partition in the beginning of it with the driver on it so I could install it anywhere and have the bulk of it, you know, X2 or X3, and be able to transfer files back and forth. The problem is Windows, is there any way to get Windows to recognize more than one partition on one of those thumb drives?
Generally,
I actually had trouble with just a regular FAT32 thumb drive. I have three FAT32 partitions, and Windows won't read the second and third partitions.
Yeah. The spec for USB to thumb drive doesn't really address multiple partitions on a thumb drive.
Because of the way it's burned, the EEPROM in the flash drive, the memory, the way it is burned, it only knows one section.
My Mac reads the three FAT32 partitions just fine.
Right.
Linux system.
Right, and the Linux system will, but the Windows system I don't believe does. That's a good question.
They ever addressed that in Vista or Windows 7?
Again, it's not an issue of that. I think it's because of the actual flash drive isn't set up to, you know, like on a hard drive. You know, I can take a normal hard drive, and it'll allow me to break it up into as many partitions as I want.
I just found a tutorial on how to do it.
Okay, but why would Linux and Mac have no problem with it, but Windows does?
It's Windows.
Yeah. Well, the reality has always been that no matter what Microsoft says, Windows was designed for the average home user who doesn't do stuff like that.
Tell me you got to flash it.
No, you change it from a removable disk to a fixed disk, and then Windows reads as many partitions as you want.
Yeah, but then getting it in and out is tricky.
Well, you have one of the other options.
Right.
Because that's kind of a non-standard thing to do to make it appear like it's not a removable disk, huh?
Right. Mm-hmm. And then if you pull it out, there's all kinds of hell to pay.
Yeah.
But getting back to the root cause of all of this, it really is not that big a deal in general to use FAT16 or FAT32 on a USB stick.
Unless you're trying to transfer DVD images, which are 4.7 gigabytes, which is beyond the 4 gigabyte limit.
Right. But, you should be able to do that then with NTFS if you format the thing NTFS. Linux should still be able to read it. Mac should still be able to read it.
I'll have to look for an NTFS driver for my Linux system then.
Yeah.
I thought the development stage of that was that it was read-only. And you know,
there is a writable NTFS file system for Linux and Mac from Paragon Systems, but it's commercial.
Well, if it's reasonably cheap, maybe.
I think it was $50. Let me find it.
What version of Linux are you using?
Sorry?
Which version of Linux are you using?
I think the last kernel I compiled was like 2.6.26. I mean, I downloaded from kernel.org and built it myself.
You should be able to do it. There's a program called, libntfs 3g, which will give you and the accompanying ntfs 3g, which is a user space, file system in user space, a Fuse library for.
Oh, Fuse, yeah.
There you go.
Ah, yeah, there's a Fuse library for Mac, too.
There you go.
The Paragon commercial software is on sale for $15 this weekend.
There you go.
But Fuse is free.
But Fuse is free.
Yeah, that works.
So there you go.
Well, I think I'll try that then.
Oh, come on. It's what you want to do this weekend anyways, play with your Linux box.
Oh, well, actually, I'd like to kind of knock down the gas bill a little bit and insulate this weekend.
Yeah. Oh, that. Oh,
yeah.
That. All right.
Well, see, that way he'll be saving so much money, he's going to become a bigger member of GSN.
That's right. Work, yes, work today,
I,
play
I
tomorrow.
And $20 to the cause.
There you go. That's what we like to hear. Thank you so much.
Welcome. Thank
Take
you.
Take it easy.
Good luck.
Bye.
I realize that got a little bit technical, but when a Linux user calls and starts
it
throwing
is.
Those kind of terms around, it's easier to explain it in his language and let him move on. What mm-hmm. we basically told him he could do is Windows uses a file system. Called NTFS, the new technology, the NT file system. It came out with Windows NT. Before that, it used the file allocation table or virtual file allocation table, VFAT. And FAT came in both 16 and 32-bit formats. And Linux uses EXT2 or EXT3. The Mac uses HTFS,
HFS, hierarchical file system.
Oh, HFS. Right,
it also can use EXT, but
right.
None of the Mac software is really.
But basically, each of these things uses one and only one file system. However, in Linux and in the Mac, you can add additional file systems in what's called user space, which is where you live, you know, as opposed to the system space, which is where the operating system lives. So you can add additional file systems, and that's what we just told him to do. So under Linux, he can add the NTFS file system and be able to read NTFS partitioned devices like a USB stick. So he can move data back and forth from his Windows machine to his Linux machine without a problem. Now, on the other hand, if they're both on the network, I don't know why he doesn't just connect one to the other like with SCP. Vito, if you're still listening, here's an even easier way to do it.
Yes.
If you use SCP, secure copy program right under Linux. There's one for Windows called WinSCP. Duh. And since you're a Linux guy, you already know how to use it. SCP stands for secure copy program. It lets you copy files from one machine to another over the internet securely so that no one else can break in and get your data. Now, I realize that's going to take a long time if you're doing video, so maybe you don't want to necessarily use it for that. But for everything else, for shorter files, it might even be a better idea to use that rather than have to fool about with all that other stuff.
We ran into a issue with a customer who bought a flash drive, and it kept saying the disk was full, trying to copy files. It turned out it was like a 4-gig drive formatted as FAT12.
Oh, jeez.
And FAT12 has a limit of 127 files at the root of the drive. You can make folders and put as many things as you want in it, but only 127 at the root of the drive.
Right.
I've always wondered why cameras make a folder on their memory card for pictures. That's why. Because the early camera cards formatted as FAT12 would limit you to 127 pictures.
Right.
Unless they put it in a folder.
Right. All right, here we go, folks. This one is a little scary. Of all the sinister things that internet viruses do, this might be the worst. They can make you an unsuspecting collector of child pornography. Heinous pictures and videos can be deposited on computers by viruses, the malicious programs better known for swiping your credit card numbers. In this twist, it's your reputation that's stolen. Pedophiles can exploit virus-infected PCs to remotely store and view their stash without fear they'll get caught. Pranksters or someone trying to frame you can tap viruses to make it appear that you surf illegal websites. Whatever the motivation, you get child porn on your computer and might not realize it until police knock at your door. An Associated Press investigation found cases in which innocent people have been branded as pedophiles after their coworkers or loved ones stumbled upon child porn placed on a PC through a virus. It can cost victims hundreds of thousands of dollars to prove their innocence. Their situations are complicated by the fact that actual pedophiles often blame viruses, a defense rightfully viewed with skepticism by law enforcement. And it's an example of the old dog ate my homework excuse, says Phil Malone, director of the Cyber Law Clinic at Harvard's Berkman Center for Internet and Society. The problem is sometimes the dog does eat your homework. The AP's investigation included interviewing people who had been found with child porn on their computers. The AP reviewed court records and spoke with prosecutors, police, and computer examiners. At the moment, about 20 million of the estimated 1 billion internet-connected PCs worldwide are infected with viruses that could give hackers full control, according to security software maker F-Secure Corp. Computers often get infected when people open email attachments from unknown sources or visit malicious web pages. Pedophiles can tap viruses in several ways. The simplest is to force someone else's computer to surf child porn sites, collecting images along the way, or a computer can be made into a warehouse for pictures and videos that can be viewed remotely when the PC is online. But pedophiles need not be involved. Child porn can land on a computer in a sick prank or an attempt to frame the PC's owner. It can be impossible to tell with certainty how a file got onto a PC. Computers are simply not to be trusted. It's painfully simple to get a computer to download something the owner doesn't want, whether it's a program that displays ads or one that stores illegal pictures. Just because it's there doesn't mean the person intended it for it to be there, whatever it is, including child porn. So you need to be very careful. And, of course, right now when we say viruses, we really mean Windows viruses for the most part, but be very, very careful what's on your machine. This is one of the reasons that whenever you have your machine doing something a little weird, not only do you have to clean it, but now you have to do a fairly rigorous search of your system to see what was there, because you don't know what's on that machine, and you need to get rid of it, whatever it was. So the question
is just more encouragement to stay on top. I know it's a pain in the butt sometimes to do the scans and that,
right,
but think of the alternatives.
Yep, exactly. So how do you feel about a virus did it as a defense against child porn charges? Give us a call, 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or 1-800-790-0415, just like Jim did. Where are you calling from, Jim?
Rochester.
And what's your question?
Well, my question is related to what you're talking about. I put some of this DSL on my computer and looked at it, and one of the advantages of doing that was that it wouldn't write anything to the hard drive, and you get to play with Linux, and you get to poke around. Well, I had my internet connection connected in Windows, and then I shut the machine off, and then I booted up in DSL. Now I've got internet connections through DSL, but since it won't write anything to disk, you can't get a virus.
Right.
Well, then why not just, and most of everything that you do on the internet is just looking around. It's not much downloading done.
Right.
You know, and every time you shut it off, it flushes everything out. Why not just go that way?
That's not a bad idea at all, Jim. And in fact, some people are in fact doing that. A lot of people have bought small machines that don't have a lot of hard disk space, sometimes no hard disk space, and they boot with a USB stick in the thing, and they surf the web using DSL, which is short for damn small Linux, or Puppy Linux, or even plain Ubuntu if you get a 4 gig or 8 gig drive, and they use that as their main machine, and that way they don't worry about what goes on the hard drive. If they feel that something has landed on their stick without on their USB stick without their consent, they can always just wipe out the USB stick on another machine and create it anew again. It takes 2 minutes. So you're right, Jim. It's a very viable way to do these things.
Another thing I've heard of people doing is using virtual machines.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a virtual machine. You surf the web, and when you're done, you erase it.
At work, my machine runs Linux as the base operating system, but I have several virtual machines, a Linux machine, a Windows machine, a couple of different Windows machines, a couple of different versions. And the other day, One of my machines is a honeypot. It's designed for testing viruses and see what happens. And it got caught, and we traced the guy and blah, 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 blah. But then all I did was dump that image, reload a clean image, and all those viruses were gone away. Thank you very much. Bye-bye. That's an excellent thing to do, Jim. Very good thought. Thank you very much.
Yeah, well, I was thinking about if you use a CD-ROM thing, that nothing can write to the CD-ROM. So you get rid of that problem about something writing to your stick.
Yep.
Nothing can write in there, and you can't write to the hard drive.
That's
so you
exactly
can just
right.
go in there and look around and then shut it off.
That's yep. exactly right. And most of the CD-ROM drive versions also will write to a stick, a USB stick, if you've got one. So what some people do is they surf from the CD, and then if there really is something they want, they pop in that stick, wait a minute till it gets recognized, download whatever that thing was, and pop the stick out again.
Yeah, well, thanks for your help.
No, thank you, Jim. Excellent, excellent thought. All right, our next caller is not going to come up for a minute.
You can't give me...
What? I got to give
he's
Dave a minute.
He's,
that's
yeah.
right. He's got to get the one guy off. I keep forgetting. This station was never originally designed. In the old, every other station, any station that's actually designed for call-in shows, you can just pop a button and the old guy goes away and the new guy comes on. But Dave's got 15 or 20 different things he's got to do before he can connect. I just have to start remembering that. Our next caller is Joel. Where are you calling from, Joel?
I'm calling from Pittsburgh.
How are things in Pittsburgh today?
Well, things are fine, and I want to thank you guys for 20 years.
Thank you.
The problem is your signal is kind of weak on this side of town, and I'm wondering if it's possible to find an app that will let me stream to my iPhone.
That's an interesting question.
Use the web, I think.
Safari
browser.
I don't know if that's a Java application, though.
I haven't tried that.
There is live streaming. There is live streaming at.
I've got that. I'm just specifically talking about the iPhone.
There are several apps for public radio. NPR has one. What's the other public radio? Public Radio Commission is.
NPR Addict. Yeah, I've got.
Yeah,
I've got
there's several
those.
Of those. I don't know if we would be listed there yet, but you can probably request it.
Well, if any iPhone developers are listening and would like to create an app. a free app, an app we can give away and develop it for free because God knows we can't afford it. We'll be glad to talk to you about creating an app that'll work for all of Jazz 90.1, including, of course, us. Now, I'm afraid we have to take a break. We'll look into that.
Sounds good. Thank
Joel,
you.
We'll look into that. Thank you. But we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 40 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, and that's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Helping you with your computer questions for over 20 years. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
The Jazz 90.1 member card is more than just a card. It's our way of thanking you for supporting Jazz 90.1. Because in return, you can save money all year long by showing your Jazz 90.1 member card for discounts at fine local member card businesses, including 45 East Fine Jewelers, Adams Basin Inn, Antonetta's Italian Restaurant, The Bob Shop, Bert Shapiro Photography, Hedonist Artisan Chocolates, Leaf and Bean Coffee Company, Lorraine's Food Factory, Mary Boyce of Mario's Hair Studio, Mind and Body Connection, New Health Cafe, Small World Bakery, Sound Source, and Tuxedo Corner, Irondequoit and Gates locations. So carry your Jazz 90.1 member card and show it when you shop. For a complete and up-to-date list of member card businesses, visit our website at www.jazz901.org. To get your member card, call 966-5299. That's 966-JAZZ, and become a member of Jazz 90.1.
Jazz 90.1 welcomes our newest member card businesses, Enright PC Management and Holland Music Studios.
Hey, parents, pick up your kids without embarrassing them with OMGPS, a navigation system that tells you how far away you need to park when you pick them up.
Keisha at mall. Proceed to outer food court.
Thanks, OMGPS.
OMGPS is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Hello, this is Joelle Van Buren. Join me weekday mornings from 6 till 10 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
All righty. Well, I apparently was daydreaming pretty nicely. And we are sound bites at 42 minutes after the hour. I was looking up programs that would stream. There are several. Of course, I haven't had a chance to play with them yet, so I don't know if they work.
I'm trying it right now. I'm thinking that just iTunes on it will
iTunes
stream it.
iTunes should be able to stream it directly. If not, there's Wonder Radio. That's $6.99. There's F-Stream. That's a free one. One of those ought to be able to work.
The Last FM player, maybe, since we're an FM station?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know if we're on Last FM. Interesting. All right, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Gerd. Gerd, where are you calling from?
Victor.
Victor, New York. What can we do for you?
I got you on the screen. I click the Listen Live, and nothing happens.
Which Listen Live button are you? On the Jazz 90
yeah.
page? Okay. That should take you to a page where you pick whether you want the high quality or the low quality.
Okay.
And that should then download a MP3 streaming file that you open with your MP3 player, iTunes, Winamp, anything like that.
Well, that's a little beyond what...
Yeah, it downloads a .m3u, so...
Well, that should... When you start the thing, it should happen automatically.
Right, unless you don't have an MP3 player in your computer.
Right, what operating system are you running?
Oh, don't.
Well, Windows, are you on a Mac?
I'm right now using Firefox. I got Windows XP.
All right, there you go. You should have Windows Media Player on your machine.
Okay.
So when you click on that link, what happens?
Nothing.
You should get to the. Do you get to the big page that says
yep.
Listen Live High Speed, Listen Low Speed?
I have that.
When you click on that, it downloads a file to your computer.
Okay.
Jazz901stream.m3u. So you need to find where you downloaded that file to, probably your desktop, and then open that file with your MP3 player like Winamp or iTunes.
Well, I continue to say that it should open automatically, and if it's not,
associations
then
may not be set, right?
Right,
if it's not opening, you may not have an MP3 player installed.
Okay.
So you may need to download iTunes or Winamp or
VLC.
VLC, any of the MP3 players.
Hold on one second. What I think probably your best bet is the VLC player. It's the VLC media player. It's pretty stinking nifty, I got to tell you. It's a pretty neat package.
It's just like a lot of the media on the internet. To you go to say CNN and want to watch a news story, you have to download the Flash player. You go to some other place and want to watch a video, you have to download the Silverlight player.
Right.
So all the different media types on the internet have different players that you have to download and install.
Right. So what you need to do is this: Steve will put up a link to the VLC media player. It's at videoland.org, but he'll videoland.org. But Steve will put up a link. You go to that link and you download the VLC media player for Windows.
Okay.
It says you get several choices. The easiest one is the Windows self-extracting package. What that means is when you download it, you go find where you downloaded and double click on it, and it'll install VNC all by itself.
Okay.
So that's the one you want. Now, theoretically, you may have to restart Firefox.
Okay.
To get it to recognize it. But once you've done that, then theoretically you go to jazz901.org, click on Listen Live, click on the high or low stream,
right,
and it should start automatically.
Very good.
Let us know.
I will.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And just to confirm, I am now streaming the radio station on my iPod. with the built-in MP3 player.
Yeah, the guy.
And I'm really screwed up because Joel, it's playing like 10 seconds behind what I'm talking to now.
Yeah, right. Joel called and said he tried the link in that, and he's playing, listening to it over his iPhone. No problem. Works great.
As long as he's happy, we're happy for him.
So it's the same thing. You go to the Jazz 901 website, click the Listen Live link, and then there's two links, one for high bandwidth, one for low bandwidth. And it inside your media player, it actually opens the iTunes media player on your iPhone, iPod Touch, and will play that media stream.
And then you should be able to save that.
Save the bookmark in your browser
iTunes,
so you can go back to it
later.
Right.
So, yeah, that's easy enough. There's no way you can't reach us. So for those of you who will be listening to this over the podcast at some later time, guess what? You don't have to wait for the podcast. If it's 4 o'clock in the morning where you are, and you've got an iPhone and you've got your data plan, all you have to do is pop in that to that web address, pop us up, and you're listening live.
It doesn't get any easier.
That should work on any cell phone with web connectivity.
Yep.
And an MP3 player.
And an MP3 player, right.
Yeah.
I'll have to try it on the...
The BlackBerrys, the whole nine yards.
Yeah, it should work on any one of them. So, you don't have to wait. I'm hoping that all week long people are listening to us on the podcast and just getting more and more excited about the whole thing, being able to listen live and continue to download the podcast, of course, because the more people who download the podcast, the more we can prove we're popular. So even those of you listening live.
And the other key thing?
Yeah.
Tell a friend.
Tell two friends.
Well,
two friends and one enemy.
That works. We don't know them. What do we care?
Yeah.
We just want them to listen.
One of the things that we're trying to do is people keep saying, well, you guys should be syndicated, yada, yada, yada. Well, we have to prove that we're popular enough to be syndicated. And the way we do that is have more listeners. And the way we do that is for you to tell all your friends. So
and
that's
the other big hurdle that we're getting over is to having folks re-find us.
Yeah, that's the tough one.
I mean, having folks, because we were, entrenched in two different places. And on the last one, we were bounced so much, like Steve and I have been talking before. We've got folks still coming in and saying, so when are you coming back on the air? And I just point to the poster.
Yeah, right.
And sometimes they're still talking about 10 years ago.
Yeah, right.
I used to listen to you all the time, and you disappeared 10 years ago.
Yep.
Oh, well.
Hey, this is great. Seizing what is perhaps its most valuable advertising real estate, Microsoft said yesterday, Friday, that it has launched a pilot program to sell ads on the Windows desktop. Advertisers can buy the right to offer various themes that customize the desktop image and that promote various gadgets and even custom sounds for the Windows 7 operating system. Microsoft stressed, however, that users will choose which, if any, of the customizations they wish to download. The Windows Personalization Gallery offers a desktop branding experience for users throughout the operation of their Windows 7-based PC, including background, slideshows, borders, and application audio elements. Microsoft's pitch is that the program will allow consumers to connect with brands they particularly like. The new Windows theme experience and Windows Personalization Gallery in Windows 7 allow consumers... Oh, excuse me. This is a Microsoft person speaking, so I have to do my Richard Nixon voice. The new Windows theme experience and Windows Personalization Gallery in Windows 7 allow consumers to customize their technology to reflect the things in life... I don't do good voices.
No, you do pretty good. Yeah.
That's a pretty good Richard Nixon.
Yeah,
they're most
really
passionate about... There are great examples of Microsoft innovation and technology coming together to enable top global brands to reach audiences in new and interesting ways. Microsoft said that the advertising program is a test that will run through October of next year. Early partners include Porsche, Infiniti, and Ducati. And Microsoft itself, so shockingly, is participating. 20th Century Fox, another early advertiser, will use the Windows desktop to promote its movies. People connect emotionally... Oh, wait, there's another Microsoft person. People connect emotionally with films and stories they tell. These are the same people who personalize their digital experience. We are thrilled to be able to bring our film properties to consumers and let them engage more deeply in the stories that move them. Microsoft said that the themes are available globally from Microsoft's website. Although new to Windows, sponsored themes have been common in other PC experiences such as instant messaging programs. And people do this all the time. Now, Dave, you wouldn't mind downloading Harley Davidson Davidson thing. Mm-hmm. You get the sounds and the borders and the, see what I mean? So are you ready for advertising on your desktop? Give us a call, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
You know what? I need more sound effects.
Yes, you do.
I got to have Rob show me how to put more. I got a couple others I'd like to have.
Yeah, I'm
like
sure you do.
A crowd going wild.
And, yeah.
That's what we need.
Boos and groans.
Yeah.
And the crowd goes wild.
There was an interesting controversy in Boston over the last several months. Apparently, there's this huge building, like an 8-9-story building, on the main drag going into Boston just before you enter the tunnel. And it's had this mural of whales on it for years. Well, the building's been under construction, so it's got all these scaffolds on it. So the building owner sold an ad to Apple to put a giant iPod ad. And the whole city of Boston's
on the scaffold.
On the front of the scaffolding, yeah.
Yeah.
So that it doesn't look so bad. And apparently the whole city of Boston's up in arms, and there's controversy, and the mayor's staff is defending it. The building owner paid $100,000 fine for not getting the right permits.
Right, because he's got an unlicensed billboard.
Right. So then he got the right permits, and it didn't solve the controversy at all. Right. So finally this week they took the sign back down, and so now we're back to the whale mural with all the scaffolding in front of it.
Yeah, right.
But that's a huge iPod sign.
All right, we're back to the phones. Our next caller is Ernesto. Is this the same Ernesto we talked to earlier?
Sure enough.
What can we do for you? You're still in Parenton?
No, as a matter of fact, I got to go to, I'm going to RIT. I got to go for my daughter's orientation.
All right, good for you.
I was listening to you about the advertising on your desktop.
Yeah.
I don't know who the hell wants to see more advertising, because I stay away from it like a plague.
Well, one of the things is it can make stuff cheaper. You know, newspapers are 50 cents because they're full of ads. If they didn't have ads, they wouldn't make newspapers.
Right, and many of the apps you can download have a little ad thing across the bottom.
It's just
another way for Microsoft to make money. God knows they're not making enough money, so they have to make more. Yes, I am kidding. Yeah.
And that's why there's a lot of PCs come with all that trial software, because those companies paid the PC company to put that on the computer, so your computer is $200-$300 cheaper because of all that trial software.
Right.
So it's interesting.
No, I agree with you, Ernesto. The good news is it looks like these will be voluntary. You can decide whether or not you want to get these and download them. So for somebody like Dave, who's a huge Harley Davidson fan, as his sweatshirt tells us today, he just showed it to the camera.
Flashing the camera.
And his belt buckle and probably his underwear, but don't show us. But he's a big Harley Davidson fan, so he may be want to download the sound so that, you know, when his machine starts up, it's a Harley starting up, and he's got the backgrounds and all that other stuff. He may be happy with that. You clearly would not be, and so you don't have to download it. It's nice that they're giving you the option. Microsoft doesn't often give you the option.
What's interesting is that a couple of weeks ago, Apple was granted a patent for an advertising-driven operating system with mechanisms in place to guarantee that the ad was actually read rather than just displayed.
Who got that patent?
Apple.
Yeah, I would never buy another Apple product if that came out. Seriously, I simply never would.
The rumors going around, a lot of companies patent a lot of things that never make it to market.
Right.
One of the thoughts on that is it's going to be for the Apple tablet. Because knowing Apple, the tablet's going to be $1,000, which is going to be too expensive. So if they build an advertising mechanism into it, or if one of the rumors is also it may have a Verizon data network in it, so Verizon will subsidize the cost like they do with phones.
Right.
So it's interesting to see what might become of something like that. So, you know, Eudora for years was advertiser driven, and
but it was a little tiny ad in the lower left corner that you didn't have to really pay a lot of attention to. And half the apps on the iPhone and in the Android store have a strip across the bottom or the top that's an ad.
And that makes it cheaper. Yeah.
But if I can't skip the ad, I'll skip the operating system.
Yeah. It was the TV industry was able to.
Well, hold on. Poor Ernesto's in his car. Are we done with you, Ernesto?
Just one more question on that issue of Outlook. When I try to get a message from one of the spam or junk mail that I wanted to see, and put it in inbox, it just destroys it, and you can't even find it anymore.
Right. If stuff has gone into your, that's another setting, Ernesto. You can have things go into your spam folder where you can look at them, or you can have them immediately deleted. That's another setting in Outlook.
Yeah. So when I wanted to put something back into the inbox, it just destroys it, and you can't find it anymore.
Right. You need to change that setting so that new stuff coming in doesn't get destroyed. That's in essentially the same place where you found all that other stuff.
Oh, okay. All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Right. Have fun. Have fun getting your daughter into RIT. I hope she's going to be in the College of Business. Okay.
Yeah.
That's in the E. Philip Saunders College of Business. Thank you very much. That's what we like to hear. All righty.
Yeah, so. I got to work at. Yeah, we need a boo, a moan, a hurrah. Got to come up.
A bunch of other things like wah, wah, wah.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
I got to get. Yeah, we got to get. Because I could redo some of these on the toolbar, move that one over and fill some more, just so we can have some other sound effects.
Yep.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, folks, honestly, I am at this moment very afraid because the look in Dave's eye is, he's got this gleam in his eye. If he had his hand on the nuclear button or the laser, this thing to start the laser, we'd all be in trouble. But luckily, it's only sound effects, so we're semi-safe at least. But he's got that evil mad scientist gleam in his eye.
Compared to what we started back in June when I was like a deer in head, you know, in front of headlights.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You were. He was pretty funny. We had Rob here for the first couple weeks. So we had to leap in a couple of times. I want to say leap across the room, but that makes it sound like there's any room in this place. But this is a tiny, tiny little place, which is why we don't have guests and stuff anymore, and it's just tiny. It's a tiny little studio. But we're very pleased to be here, very fortunate to be here. We again, you know, thank everybody for their membership, for showing how much you appreciate, showing the folks at Jazz 90.1 how much you appreciate us being here. And that music tells me that we are prepared to take another break here at the top of the hour. We will, of course, be back for another hour because it's only five. It's only a minute to one. So we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. You are, and I am privileged and honored to say this, listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side. So stay tuned as you listen on your iPhones and your Androids.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, the answer to your computer questions, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
Streaming online at jazz901.org.
This is President Barack Obama. In the story of America, the greatest chapters are moments of challenge, when we see people serving their country and one another. Volunteers who step forward into hospital corridors and church basements, along levees and fire lines. And the next chapter is yours to help write. Sign up to volunteer at usaservice.org. That's usaservice.org. Let's renew America together.
A message from Renew America Together, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Every day we make sure we get things done to keep ourselves on track. To live the way we want to live. And every day we make choices, large and small, that reflect who we are, from the clothes we buy to the car we drive to where we choose to live. If you enjoy Jazz 90.1, make the choice to become a member. And once a year, renew that membership. See how it feels. It just might be one more small but important choice you make to live the way you want to with Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
I was a 30-year-old personal trainer when chest pain and shortness of breath changed my life.
I'm Essence Harris, and it's been 5 years since an angiogram revealed a 90% blockage in two arteries. Now I'm asking all women to take control of their heart health. Exercise and eat a diet rich with heart-healthy foods like leafy greens, oats, and soy. And above all, listen to your body. To learn more, visit womenheart.org.
A public service from Women Heart and the United Soybean Board.
Here's what people are saying about Jazz 90.1.
I'm really enjoying your program tonight. Thank you so much for playing live jazz on the radio.
I'm an old jitterbug lady, now 83, who still enjoys all that great music.
I want to thank you for supporting local talent. What you do is great, man. I really think you got a good station. I am so glad that Progressive Radio is still alive. Progressive Radio lives, and God bless you.
Hi, I'm ecstatic that Sound Bites found a new home on Jazz. I thank you, and I love you guys.
Hi, I'm listening to your station tonight, and it's absolutely fantastic. The string of songs you're playing are absolutely great.
I enjoy all of your hosts.
Enjoy your station a great deal. It's really cool.
I think your jazz station is one of the best I've ever heard. It's really great.
I finally found the station, and I like their music, and I hope you never go out of business.
This is station manager Rob Linton. Thank you to all of our members and listeners for supporting great jazz radio, Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I'm envisioning whole bunches of people across the globe going, holy cow, I can listen via my iPhone. Maybe you can listen via your Droid. I, of course, don't have one, so I can't report as to whether or not that works. Mumble, mutter, angry, dang, nabbit.
The streamer is up to 79.
Mm-hmm. 79 yep. people listening yep. live on the stream, and that's a good thing. We are delighted.
I want to break 100.
Yeah, I know. Dave's got this thing.
I
got
a goal. I want to by Christmas, I want to be up to 100.
Yep. And maybe you'll get that.
That'll be my Christmas gift.
That's his
listeners
Christmas gift.
To me.
So everybody's got to be listening.
Let's do that one first.
All right, this is wonderful. As you know, we've been, for the last few weeks, we've been in a membership drive, and it's done now, $50,500-plus. And the reason I say plus dollars is because friend of the show, Dolores, we love Dolores, we love you, Dolores, and we loved you even before you did this, has just pledged again. She's pledged an additional amount because she loves this show and not as much as we love her, but love is not a contest.
No, exactly.
And so we're delighted.
Love
and
is a battlefield.
Never. Yeah. But not a contest. But yeah. So we want to thank you, Dolores. God bless you. This is a great and wonderful thing. There's no reason to not keep pledging, even though the pledge drive itself is over. You can pledge any time, and we'll happily take that pledge. So thank you so very, very much, Dolores. You know we love you. You're wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah, she was asking, because just for you folks that might care, or maybe don't. I don't really care. But anyways, last night I was not able to make it into Second Life because
right.
I had the chance to go see TSO. And for you folks that don't know what that is, that stands for Trans-Siberian Orchestra. And they put on one heck of a show.
Where were they?
At the War Memorial. And I've gone, this is my fourth time going, and it was really wild. So I apologize that I couldn't make it into Second Life. But for you folks that don't know about Second Life, we should maybe elaborate there, because not only do we do this show on Saturdays from 12 to 2, we're also in Second Life.
Every Friday, 9 o'clock Eastern time, that's 6 o'clock Linden time, we're on the Finger Lakes Island. Easy enough to find us. You can look us up in events and teleport right there. So every Friday from 6 to, say, 7:30, 8 o'clock Linden time, 9 to 10:30, 11 o'clock our time, Eastern time, that is. We're in Second Life doing the same thing we do here, answering people's questions and just chit-chatting along. It's a lot looser than it is here, and we talk about whatever we feel like talking about. Last night we got off on a couple of little tangents, but we had a good time. Steve made it most of the way through before he started breaking up. Did you leave and come back, or did you just...
We were getting close to the end anyway, I made it 80 minutes before the video or audio started breaking up.
Yeah. Yeah, I probably somebody else wasn't on his stream somewhere.
Ah. No, I think he was playing his games.
I don't know. I don't know. But that's...
Maybe it's the neighbor downloading the BitTorrents.
Yeah. Right, you're on a shared connection, So, but it was fun last night. We do that every Friday. So if you are a Second Life person, player, avatar, haver, whatever they call themselves, please feel free to join us. We're in there. Dolores is in there with us, a whole bunch of people. And so,
and Lolly. You'll have fun. Got to mention Lolly, our Sergeant of Arms.
Sure, she's our Sergeant of Arms. She was there last night. She had to leave, but she was there for a while. So it was a lot of fun.
Cool.
All right. For those of you who've been following the television saga of AT&T versus Verizon, you know Verizon has this series of commercials where they say there's a map for that.
Oh yeah.
And they compare their 3G coverage versus AT&T's 3G coverage, Verizon versus AT&T. And AT&T's 3G coverage, not their nationwide coverage in total using Edge and everything else, but their 3G coverage, Verizon's, is much greater than AT&T's. And that's what they show on these two maps. Now, AT&T sued them, saying that it's false advertising, and you have to take it down immediately. Verizon said, yeah, okay, let's go to court then. you explain how an accurate map, essentially
correct,
taking your map,
misleading.
No, it's not misleading. It says right on it.
3G coverage.
3G coverage.
AT&T says we've got 2G and 1G that fills in the rest. We cover 97% of the country.
And they're right. Yep. They absolutely do, but they don't cover it all with 3G, and that's what Verizon is saying. They're not saying you can't get an AT&T signal. But they're saying you can't get a 3G signal, and that's all they're saying.
Yep.
In fact, a whole bunch of people were talking about how they were in, what's the new term now? Geographically unfortunate areas for AT&T coverage. They can still get an AT&T signal, but it's not 3G. At any rate, AT&T wants to set the record straight about its nationwide coverage. They posted a note on their website offering some key facts about what they cover and how. AT&T has, of course, filed the suit against Verizon Wireless, alleging that Verizon is misleading customers about AT&T's coverage areas and its commercials. The key facts note comes a day after AT&T reportedly went back to court to request that Verizon be made to immediately stop airing a new series of holiday-timed ads, including... It's a great ad. Including one in which the iPhone arrives on the island of misfit toys, which again shows a map of AT&T's 3G coverage. AT&T's wireless data coverage reaches 303 million people, or 97% of the U.S. population where they live and work, according to AT&T. And that's correct, but it's not 3G. It says their 3G covers 233 million people, and their GPRS, which is the slowest version, covers 303 million people, and overlapping, of course, the other people. With both 3G and Edge coverage, customers can access the Internet, send email, surf the web, yada, 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 yada. It says it also has twice the number of smartphone customers is Verizon, who is their closest competitor. I don't know that that's going to last. Every single carrier is coming out with an Android-type phone. T-Mobile has one. Sprint has one. Cricket is planning to come out with something. Certainly Verizon has the Droid. And so that's pretty nice.
Gotta get you a Droid.
You know, the reality is that the bottom line is that the iPhone's been both a blessing and a curse for AT&T. It's incredibly popular, but it's bogging down AT&T's network. According to one report, AT&T says that the iPhone is only 10% of their users, but 90% of their traffic. Another report says it's not the iPhone's fault, but the fact that AT&T cellular equipment is badly configured. Who knows where the truth is?
Well, probably just old, because they're the first and biggest, right?
But the thing
which
that
is
I've
why
heard
Verizon has the faster more coverage, because that's all they've been putting up is their 3G. Verizon doesn't really have a 2G network.
Right.
But, you know, besides the data plan, you know, that's separate. What I've been hearing from a lot of the folks with the iPhones, what they're complaining about is just simple phone calls. I mean, they can be just turn around, 180 degrees, and all of a sudden they lose the coverage.
Well, and the real problem is if you look at the AT&T map, they've got 3G coverage in all the major metropolitan areas, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, et cetera. That's where the majority of the iPhone sales have been. And it's bogging down their network to the point where calls are dropped, data stops flowing, text messages simply never, ever show up. So people are getting angry at AT&T, and like Steve said, it's not entirely their fault. They're one of the oldest phone networks in the country, and therefore it costs them a bucket load of cash to move up to increase their coverage. And you know what? We'll see as various Android-capable smartphones become more numerous whether Verizon suffers the same problems that AT&T has.
Well, Sprint is already talking about the 4G network. Verizon is starting to roll out their 4G network, so we should start seeing. But it's going to be a couple, 3 years before full penetration of the 4G network,
right?
Which a boon for all phone users is the same on both sides. Right now, we have two competing 3G networks. So you buy a Verizon phone and it cannot run on AT&T, and an AT&T phone cannot run on Verizon.
Right. So give us a call, Droid. Or iPhone, we want to know. Give us a call at 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Linda did from Greece. Linda, welcome back.
Hi, I've got a question. I've tried, I don't know how many times in the second life. First of all, I've got a learning disability. I have tried getting to find you people. Is there any way somebody can write up maybe a short little manual on how to do it? I have tried. I've gone through the tutorial. I've done everything. I can't find you guys.
All right. Are you in Second Life? Can you get into Second Life at all?
Yeah, I signed up, and I've got an avatar, and I've got everything.
All right. Then here's what you do. Once you're in Second Life, and it's actually running, on your web browser, go to soundbites.org. Right?
Huh?
In on our website, there's a link directly to Second Life.
It'll bring up a map.
I think only when we're in Second Life, or is it there all
the time? No, it's there right now. Okay. And it says right on the main page, if you scroll down, you'll see the Facebook link. You'll see the Twitter link first, then the Facebook link, and then the Second Life link. And it says, join us in Second Life every Friday at 6 p.m. Linden time, 9 p.m. Eastern. That is a link. If you click on it, it actually activates in Second Life. So click on that link. It should bring Second Life up to the front. If it doesn't, bring Second Life up to the front. And it'll say right there, do you want to teleport to this place? You say teleport. Click the teleport button, and you'll be right there with us.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'll try, because I don't know how many times I've tried. I think I'm doing something wrong.
No, it is a little difficult at first to figure your way around. But once you have found that, you can add it to your...
You can set it as your home.
Yeah, you can set it to your home, and then every time you come into Second Life, you'll show up there.
Yeah, it is a complete virtual world, and just like the real world, it takes some navigating to find your way around.
Yeah, that's why we've provided the link. But you're right. If you don't know about the link, you won't go to the link. So now you know about the link. So next Friday at 9 o'clock, start up Second Life, log in, and then open up your web browser, go to the Soundbites website, click on Join Us in Second Life, and it'll take you right there, and then you can make that your homepage or just add it as a place you go to. You'll be on your way.
What is it, under World? Once you get in there and you're at the Soundbites location, up along your toolbar, there's World. And under World, that drop-down menu, there's a spot where you can say, make this my home. And it'll allow you to make it your home. So now when you go to log on to Second Life the next time, it'll default to your home. You'll automatically be right there at Soundbites.
Okay, I'm going to have to wait for the podcast to come out because I'll never remember this.
But the podcast will be out later this afternoon, and then you can write it all down and join us next Friday.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys.
Excellent. Thanks, Linda. And that's absolutely true. It takes time to learn about Second Life. It's a lot of fun, but it's a big, big place.
And it's free. I mean, and it's a lot of fun. And the, you know, folks that we have met, I mean, I've got friends now, you know, of course, right here in the U.S. I've got friends I talk to daily, a guy in Guam.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, he's constantly listens. I've got a number. Matter of fact, another gentleman listens to us on our podcast who is in England, and he takes the podcast to work, and he shares it with his friends at work. And they said some of the shows, and again, he happened to comment about the one discussion that we had when I had a friend of mine call in.
Yeah.
And you were suggesting that I was doing certain things with my dog.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't you were doing things with your dog, but this cop... This police officer stops him and says, "Hey, you're the guy on the website. Yeah, I understand you've got a, what was it? Not a corgi.
No, I had a Westie.
A Westie?
No, this was my Scottish Terrier. And what it was...
And he wanted to breed his dog with your dog. And I thought, you got stopped by the cops for a doggy booty call? That's just wrong on so very, very many levels.
That was back in the day with, I had my old Volkswagen. And I was at the McDonald's back when hamburgers and all that were like 10 and 15 cents.
Heck yeah.
And I stopped there and...
I have a coupon from Carol's for a 15 cent hamburger.
I had a friend who, once Carol's disappeared from here, once in a while would travel to Batavia. Because Batavia was one of the last few places that Carol's pulled out of.
Yep.
And once in a while, he'd treat himself and go all the way up to Carol's because he just loved their hamburgers.
Yep, they were delicious.
Yes.
Going back to cell phones for a minute, two big things that are happening in the cell phone world. Verizon is more than doubling their early termination fee.
For smartphones,
yes. For smartphones, $350 now if you cancel your two-year contract because they really don't want you to switch phones. Most of the carriers, but it seems to be Verizon, is getting hit mostly. You're running into $1.99 fees on your phone bill.
Yeah.
Most people don't look at the line items and just pay the bill at the end. And so there's millions of dollars has been racked up in these $1.99 fees. Verizon, when you call and complain, Verizon says you must have activated your mobile web, which I find myself doing on my Verizon phone frequently. You push the wrong button, you get into the mobile web. Well, if you don't have a data plan, you're charged, you know, $1.99 a minute or whatever it is, or $1.99 a meg. So they're saying, yeah, you must have accidentally pushed that button. So be careful about your buttons.
And in fact, it's very easy to do because if you open your phone, depending on the model you have, you open your phone, you hit up, you're immediately on the, you're getting on the, even if you say, no, not now, it's already connected, downloaded 0.06 megs, and there's your $1.99.
Yep.
Yep.
So, you know, we've said it for quite a while. Look at your phone bills, look at your credit card bills, and make sure all those charges are legitimate.
All right. Sounds to me like we're about to take a break. So we will do that. Dave's rocking out now.
I love some of this bumper music that he puts in.
Yeah, it's pretty nice stuff. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Give us a call, 966-JAZZ, 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. We're on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.
This is Station Manager Rob Linton thanking you for becoming a member or renewing your membership to Jazz 90.1. Because of you, we'll continue to broadcast great jazz music you've come to expect, as well as continuing our online streaming, live studio concerts, and special programs you can't hear anywhere else. If you've not yet made that pledge of support to Jazz 90.1, you still have time. You can pledge securely online at jazz901.org. or by calling 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. You can browse and select from the great thank you gifts we're offering at the various donation levels like CDs and DVDs and great Jazz 90.1 clothing items online. Thank you for supporting your jazz station. Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I'm Steve Wozniak, and you're listening to Soundbites.
Hey there. So what's with all the books?
Oh, I'm finally going back to night school.
Oh, good for you. Maybe I'll join you.
Well, it's more affordable this year. There's a Recovery Act tax credit up to $2,500 for college expenses like tuition, books, supplies.
Huh. Where'd you learn that?
IRS.gov/recovery. It's the official source.
Hey, you could help me with my homework, right?
Yeah, I could, but I won't.
Hi, this is Charles Benoit. Join me and the entire Smart Set tonight from 5 to 6 right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 22 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. We just had Nert on the IRC chat. He's listening from Maryland on the stream. So we know the stream works. I want to know how many people are listening on the iPhone. Go into the sound bites.
I'd like folks just to call us on the 800 number.
Us on the 800 number. Let us know if you're listening on the iPhone. Less this week than next week, I suspect. I was just looking at the numbers. We have almost we have about 350, a few more than three, over 350 listeners who download the podcast every week. From Finland and Norway and Germany and Canada and Belgium and the UK and every place else. So
now, how does that, does it 1-800 number, say from England, does that work?
You can call an 800 number. I don't know. That I don't know.
It may not be toll free. Sometimes the toll free only works in the U.S.
Well, but that's what I'm saying. Get into the, somebody needs to, well, I can't because I'm not there right now, but somebody needs to start something in the forums that says, you know, are you listening on your iPhone, or are you listening on your Droid, or on some on your BlackBerry, on your whatever, and we can start a list of who does that. I'd love to see, you know, starting next week, the week after, when people hear about this, they'll be able to get on.
Or if you're listening right now, just pick up the phone and call us.
966-5299
or 1-800-790-0415. Love to hear from you, and you know, we're taking your computer questions. We're getting other. We got some questions there, don't we?
We've got some questions here, but I first want to talk about, you know, we're talking about phones and things like that.
Yeah. Yep.
Google has confirmed its intention to acquire Gizmo 5, an internet telephony company, with plans to merge the group into the Google Voice team. The pending acquisition has been reported earlier in the week by TechCrunch, but was overshadowed by the announcement of Google's third largest acquisition to date, the $750 million AdMob deal on the same day. Late Thursday, Google confirmed that it acquired the company, although financial terms of this deal were not disclosed. Gizmo 5 is a web-based voice over IP or VoIP client that lets you make phone calls over the internet, similar to programs like Skype. It's based, however, on an open standard called SIP that fits a little better into Google's worldview rather than Skype's internally developed system. Gizmo 5 works on both PCs and mobile phones. The technology will likely be used in some way to enhance Google Voice. Google Voice isn't a VoIP client. It lets you use a single number to ring multiple phones and get voicemails transcribed into email, but it does that over existing phone networks. As Google figures out exactly what it wants to do with Gizmo 5, it is suspending new signups for the service, but current users will still be able to use it. So are you excited about Google owning their own phone system? Give us a call, 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Google really is at some point going to own the world. Google having their own phone system could do it. You know, I use a SIP phone all the time because I use a Kiga. Which is an open source thing, and I make voice and video calls to people all the time. It works like Skype, but it uses the open SIP format. Now I don't know if the what you call it on the Mac uses SIP or not.
I'm not familiar with the acronym, but it may be in there. Almost everything is in there.
Well, yeah. But yeah, it's a pretty neat thing, and I talk to people all over the place, far too often on that, and so it'll be interesting to see what Google ends up doing. Are we ready to talk to Fritz? Fritz, where are you calling from?
Canandaigua, Nick.
Canandaigua, New York. What can we do for you?
Well, I watch Leo Laporte during the week. He has Mac Break and he has Windows Weekly. And last Thursday, he had Paul Thurrott on for an hour and a half. and Windows 7 didn't get mentioned once. And in the chat rooms, they were really taking them to task for it. And I was just wondering what Dave has experienced since Windows 7 come out as far as in his shop.
Believe it or not, folks are, I had a number of folks hold off and buy new machines because instead of paying for two operating systems, which you know, because Windows XP, you know, as we've been saying, is slowly going to go away. But right now, Windows 7 is very compatible with the older stuff. And that was the biggest thing against Vista. I'm not saying that the operating system didn't work. It was the support and finding drivers and everything else that was, say, for older stuff that just wasn't there.
Right. If you happen to have hardware that they had drivers for, it worked like a top.
You won. Yeah. But if you didn't, their excuse was, well, I guess you got to go out and find buy a new printer. And it's like, well, wait a minute. My printer is working fine with three other Windows XP machines. Sorry, that's all we can tell you.
Yeah.
And ironically, that Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott is being rebroadcast right now on live.twit.tv.
But to answer your question, though, no, Windows 7, you know, if you got to choose, you know, go for it.
Again, as we've been saying, a fresh install works great.
Yes.
An upgrade sometimes doesn't because of the problems in the registry. You know, small things in the registry in one operating system often translate into big problems in the upgrade.
Well, I, you know, we're a Mac household, but my wife has a Windows machine that I try to keep current for her. It's XP, and it's been doing just great, but I know I'm going to have someplace down the line.
All right, here's another thing. Unless that machine is not performing and doing what she wants,
yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Then don't do squat.
No, we don't intend to. But I was just surprised, you know, October 22nd, it was the big hue and cry, and then, you know, Windows 7, and the past week or so, I've heard basically nothing at all about it.
Right, right. It's
I kinda
out there
like,
doing pretty well.
I kind of like their new commercials for Windows 7. They.
I'm a PC and I created Windows 7.
The features. I requested this feature and here it is in Windows 7.
Yes.
I kind of like those commercials because they explain the features. It's the Mac versus PC commercials are cute for us industry insiders, but I don't really know if they tell computer users anything.
They don't. You're absolutely right. The ads that Apple is putting out with John Hodgman and Justin Long are cute and funny and smug and all of that stuff, but they're not telling me, the average computer guy, well, not me, but the average computer guy, why he or she should switch.
Right, and now Windows has these ads about here's these cool features that Windows has. I like the one where you shake it and it jumps to the corners.
Yep.
We talked about a Mac program that you have to
a snap too. And if you take a window that's open and you got a bunch of other windows open, all you do is go up to the top, you grab that window and you shake it, and all the other windows will close down onto your toolbar.
Yep. And you're right. I think that Microsoft is doing a better job of connecting with the user than Apple is with those ads. I think those ads are actually doing, and I've said this before, are doing Apple a disservice.
Yeah, Apple's latest ads are basically...
Oh, wait. Do we still have Fritz on the line?
Oh.
Yeah. So that answer your question then for you?
Oh, sure. I just, you know, as I say, it was kind of conspicuous by its losing its place on the web as far as, you know, news stories.
Yeah.
It's just Windows 7. That was the news 2 weeks ago. Now I guess it's something else.
Well, to keep the happy home front going.
Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 is the big news this week.
Yes, it is.
But like I said, unless it's broken, don't fix it. Keeps the wife happy.
Gotcha, David.
I'm reading the show notes for that Windows Weekly, and one of the things they did talk about was Windows Mobile 6.5, which is huge also-ran compared to iPhone and Droid.
Droid came out of nowhere and just...
But you know, their take on Windows Mobile 6.5 doesn't suck as much as you've been led to believe.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joe. Where are you calling from, Joe?
Oh, Rochester, actually.
Very nice.
Yeah, how are you guys?
Don't sound surprised. It's good to be in Rochester. What can we do for you?
Yeah, well, now that I found you again.
There you go.
I have a question for you. Actually, I have a few, but one more major one. If I don't get this one fixed, the other two don't make any difference.
Right.
My computer did something wrong last week.
Your computer did something wrong.
It had to be the computer.
Yeah, clearly.
It had to be. In any case, I had switched antiviruses and went to Avast.
Right.
So, you know, I was on the 60-day trial period, and that was fine. And they kept coming up and asking, you know, if I wanted to buy it. And I thought, well, you know, maybe if we got closer, we'd get a deal on price. They don't, by the way.
Right.
But so I kept waiting, and I misunderstood the, you know, 2 days left, 1 day left. I thought I had another day. I didn't. So last Saturday when it came up, it said, you know, you're expired. It's been nice knowing you.
Right.
So I said, well, okay, this is not a good idea. So I went, you know, and bought the license, installed it, or, you know, put the license in, all of that.
Right.
I said, well, you know, it's been a while since I've done a few weeks since I did a virus thing. I should do that. So I did, you know, I deleted the, or I tried to, you know, follow the Tango thing and delete all the temp files and, you know, all the internet files.
Right.
And it had I had a hard time in deleting, for the first time, only time, in deleting the temp files.
Right.
But finally did that and tried to take out the backup points or the restore points. I'm not XP, by the way.
Right.
Take out the restore points. That thing just didn't do that at all. And I think I had to shut the machine off and restart it. But I did run the antivirus, did that. But ever since then now, this week, when I start the machine up, it when it goes to, you know, my home page or screen or whatever it is,
right,
my icons aren't there. So I have to log off and log back on, and they pop up. It's fine.
How long have you
then
waited?
Today, it just wouldn't do it at all. And it took me several attempts to find, and finally they popped up. But
how long? And Steve has a great point. How long are you waiting before you reboot
or log off again?
I mean, log off again.
Oh, I don't know, 15, 20. I mean, once the screen comes up and, you know, the red light for the drive stops flashing, maybe, you know, a few 10 seconds or something after that.
Well, you need to probably wait somewhat longer. How old is your computer?
I have no idea. It's probably a year, maybe 2 years old, because I had it rebuilt.
How much memory do you have?
Oh, God.
Well, here's my point. One of the things that happens when you start the machine is Avast checks everything before it allows it to work. If your machine is slower or it doesn't have a lot of RAM, it takes a while for that initial startup to happen.
And if you have a lot of icons on your desktop, that could take several minutes.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think that's it, though, because when I had it rebuilt a year or something ago, or 2 years, and I did that because I don't know why, because something wasn't working and the guy just... His idea to fix it is wipe it out and redo it.
Right.
Up until I did this last weekend, you know, it would come up and the icons were there. I mean,
And what we're saying is that your antivirus is trying to scan every item on your desktop before it displays those icons.
To make sure they're all clean.
So you may have to wait several minutes for the icons to come up again. Theoretically, the first time, and then it should know those are clean for each successive time.
Right.
So especially if you have a lot of things.
Do us this favor to start a test. Next time you boot up, just wait and actually look at a clock so you know it's been a few minutes. You know, because we're all human and we think, well, I waited 5 minutes and it was actually 12 seconds.
That was never 5 minutes just then.
Exactly. So do us a favor and wait. And if nothing happens after a couple of real minutes, then maybe there's a problem somewhere, but I don't, at this point, none of us think there's an actual problem. We think you're just not waiting actually long enough.
Really? Because I don't get the taskbar on the bottom or anything.
Right. Try that first.
All right.
And
okay.
And the next thing to try would be to temporarily disable the antivirus and see if that
right.
makes things come up faster.
Give it a shot and let us know, please.
Yeah.
Disabling the antivirus, I mean, but that starts automatically when the machine boots up.
Well, then you disable it and say reboot.
Oh, okay, I guess. Okay.
All right. Let us know.
Thank you.
Thanks. Often enough, the problem with these things is not is diagnosing them.
Yeah.
And we always need to try everything in order. You can't, you know, depending on the response you get from the first one tells you what to do with the second one.
It wouldn't hurt to try a safe boot, too.
Right. Our next caller is Ron. Where are you calling from, Ron?
Rochester.
All right. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm on the web. I get some of these web pages and stuff. The print is so small, it's so difficult to read. I'm wondering, is there a way that I can magnify, the picture, the page and stuff? I'm running Windows XP Home.
And what web browser are you using?
Internet Explorer.
All right. You should be able to do that. You can pull down the View menu, and there's a Zoom section there. That will let you zoom the screen out some. In addition, usually the hold the control key down and hit the plus or the minus button up on the numbers across the top of the keyboard.
Okay.
And that'll make it bigger or smaller.
All right, so you can make it as big as you want then.
Yeah, absolutely. You can also go in the preferences or the options, and on one of the tabs, and I don't remember which one it is, you can set the minimum size for a font.
Because the other end picks what size font to use.
Right, and so if you've got a very large monitor with very small print, you can't see it. But you can go in and say, well, I want the minimum size to be 16-point type.
Would that be under, advanced, under settings?
On Internet Explorer, I don't know off the top of my head, but if you look around, you will find it.
Okay.
Yeah, you just got to peck around and, pull down a few menus and read through them.
And okay. what version of Internet Explorer are you
using? Because I was looking all over.
Do you have your phone? Do you have your radio on?
I thought there was something under the control panel or something to get into at first.
You can do it that way, but it's convoluted.
That would change the size of the text on the desktop and in your menus.
But you still can do it through internet options somewhere, but it's convoluted. Do it right inside Internet Explorer.
Right.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I suppose we should mention our mini rant, I guess, against Internet Explorer. Although IE8, we're hearing, is working pretty well. There's a lot of dangers in using Internet Explorer on the internet, because that's how a lot of viruses and malware get into your computer because of such the tight integration between IE and the operating system, Windows itself.
Unless you absolutely, positively, no other recourse, because some web pages are that persistent. Right. Though government pages are slowly coming over and going to Foxfire and that, which used to be just IE, but there are some bank ones and that type of stuff that they need to, look at other browsers, whether it's Google Chrome
or Firefox. Most websites work fine in Firefox.
Yep.
In fact, was that one of your stories? Firefox now has a 25% market share?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's one of the stories here. One in four people now use Firefox to surf the web. One quarter of all the people on the internet are now using Mozilla's open-source Firefox web browzer. Firefox reached a 25% milestone on Sunday, according to Vince Vizzicaro, executive vice president of California-based Net Applications, which measures browser usage by tracking the machines that visit the 40,000 sites it monitors for clients. We always thought that Firefox would be a great position to compete with Microsoft's Internet Explorer if it made 10%. Now, one in four people globally are browsing the internet with Firefox. Mozilla passed the 10% mark back in March of 2006. The move past 25% wasn't really a surprise because it's been climbing up. Firefox has only been out since 2004, and it's now 25% of the internet. So it's in exceptionally good shape right now. Interesting. Chrome's market share month-to-month increase is actually faster than Firefox's, but it still doesn't have that complete share. Chrome should hit about 5% sometime next March. So it's a pretty good thing. A lot of people are moving to it, and it's a pretty neat thing. So are you using Firefox, Google Chrome, or Internet Explorer, or Opera, or Safari? Give us a call. 966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or 1-800-790-0415. We're going to take a quick break, back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Celebrating 20 years on air, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Jazz 90.1, streaming online worldwide at jazz901.org.
Hey, this is Rip Savage. Join me tonight for Fusion, 10 p.m., right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 42 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
Oh.
Do you, would you like to? Yes, he would. All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is it, kiddies. Grab your footy jammies. Grab your mugs of hot cocoa. Sit in Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. If we can slap them awake. It's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Okay, yeah. I'm finally here. You know, matter of fact, the other call, two callers ago, were just talking about, you know, whether to go to Windows 7. And yes, it is a great operating system. You know, it's well worth it. And, you know, we've always been trying to preach right now locally, buy local, because the support here is local. And I don't know if Steve runs into this, but you sit there and you take the time and you do a quote, and then they come back and say, all right, well, we'd like to do this. And I say, okay, well, we can make those changes.
Half the time they don't come back.
Well, I wound up doing like four or five iteration changes. And then the person comes back and says, all right, how much can I overclock it? I says, tell you what, you overclock it, and I ain't warranting it.
It's one of the links I posted last night. A group got to overclock an AMD to 7 gigahertz by using liquid helium cooling.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, folks. All right, yes, you can overclock a machine till the cows come home. But here's the issue. All right, your car, it says on the speedometer, you can do 120 miles an hour. Now, are you going to do constantly 120 miles an hour?
No.
Constantly? No, because you're going to eventually burn out the engine.
Right.
Because it isn't meant to do that. Yes, it can, but it's not meant to do it. Same with a computer. Yes, you can overclock it. Is it meant to do it? No. So the minute, and especially you tell me, oh, well, how much can I overclock it? And I'm being honest with you, fine, you do that.
None.
And I'm not warranting it. Yep.
Right.
Because you're going to take it beyond the extremes. And then they get porked off at me.
Right, like it's your fault. Right. Spend the extra money and get the faster machine. But, oh, no, if I get the cheaper machine and overclock it, I win. Sometimes you do. Mm-hmm. The deal with chips is the same as it is with watch crystals, with watch chips. They only make really one template, right? They make one die. And then what happens is... if it fails at 3 gigahertz, they test it at 2.5 gigahertz. And if it passes at 2.5 gigahertz, then it becomes a 2.5 gigahertz chip. Mm-hmm. But once they've made enough 3 gigahertz chips, they stop testing at 3 gigahertz.
Right.
They only test at 2.5 gigahertz. So you may get a 2.5 gigahertz chip. You can overclock to 3 gigahertz because it really would do 3 gigahertz. But nobody's going to guarantee that. And if it wouldn't do 3 gigahertz because it failed at 3 gigahertz, then you've got a chip that'll fail when you overclock it. It'll overheat. It'll burn out your machine. And somehow that becomes Dave's fault because he sold you a machine that wouldn't overclock. I don't think so.
No, and I won't, you know, especially when you tell me that you're going to sit there and overclock it. I mean, sorry.
In fact, a lot of times, overclocking voids the warranty.
Yes. And that, like I said, I wasn't going to warranty it. He goes, well, I want to be able to overclock it. And I says, well, then, you know what? Maybe you should check somewhere else. Because I don't want that headache.
We hear a lot, too, that, well, it's $500 cheaper at the other store. Then it's not the same computer.
That's exactly right.
There might be a $10 or $20 margin, but $500, it's not the same computer.
I told you about the guy who came in a dozen times when I used to sell computers and finally came in and said, you know, they're selling it $5 cheaper down the road. I said, then go get it down the road.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he did. Then he starts coming in and asking me questions.
Mm-hmm.
I said, wait a minute. You bought a machine from somebody else. Go ask them. They said, well, they don't know anything. I said, well, that wasn't worth $5 to you. I'm not going to answer your questions for free. I'm just not going to do it. You can't walk into my store and get your questions about somebody else's computer answered by me. I think that's a little unreasonable. So he said, well, all right, I'll return it. And you'll sell it to me for that same price. I said, no, because you have turned out to be a pain in my patoot. So here's the deal. If you want to buy a computer from me, you will pay list price. And then I'll answer every question
and
you
that
want,
was back
but
when,
I won't sell you.
That was back when 20% discount was common.
Exactly.
One thing we got.
Now you can't get any discount because everything is selling. Remember, there used to be list price and street price.
Right.
Well, now list price is street price.
That's
there's
the
no
truth.
Margins anymore.
We got one person just called, didn't want to go on the air, but she asked a very viable question. What is overclocking?
Oh, excellent question. Overclocking means you buy a computer.
I explained it.
Yeah, right. You buy a computer, and it's designed to work at, say, 2 gigahertz. That's it runs 2 million operations per second,
the clock
essentially.
Speed.
That's
yes.
the speed of the clock. Faster clocks mean your system runs faster, does more things per second, and so you get a faster machine. So if you get a 1.6 gigahertz machine or a 3 gigahertz machine, the 3 gigahertz machine is approximately twice as fast.
And we're not going to tell you how to overclock.
As the 1.6, right. But you can change the clock on your motherboard and make it run faster. So that's not necessarily a bad thing in terms of the speed that it runs, but running faster means running hotter. And the faster you run, the hotter you run. And a lot of the motherboards are not designed to take the heat of the faster clock speed. So what happens is they overheat and they burn out.
Well, that's like I was using the car analogy.
Right.
Your car says it can do 120 miles per hour on the speedometer. Now, would you do it all the time? No, because the heat coming off that engine, and it's really not meant to do it constantly. And that's effectively what you're doing with overclocking, is you're running your engine at 120 miles per hour all the time.
Which right. is why some of the overclocking sites will use extra cooling, like Freon or as I mentioned, liquid helium
yeah.
at 4 degrees Kelvin.
That's a little much.
Whoa.
But, yeah, so you can buy a 2.0 gigahertz machine and maybe run it at 2.1, maybe run it at 2.2.
So you get much, but that's what?
Right, and you get a shorter run life, and it's a insignificant increase in real performance. It's a bragging right, basically,
yes,
these
right.
days.
Yeah, right, and they manage 7 gigahertz. There was a guy who took a 486 and ran it at 2 gigahertz by sticking it in a freezer packed with beer, which I thought was and interesting, because yeah. when the experiment's over, they can drink the pack.
Celebrate.
Exactly.
Celebrate.
Yeah,
it's already cold.
Liquid nitrogen is at negative 200 Celsius. Liquid helium is at negative 270 degrees Celsius.
Right. So, yeah, you can overclock, which means making it run faster than it was designed to run.
Very good question from one of our listeners. I'm glad she took the time to call us and let us know.
And because of all that heat, if you've ever opened up and looked inside your computer, you're going to see giant fans that are pushing air around trying to keep it cool.
And a ton of dust.
And a ton of dust that gets sucked in trying to push all that air around. And
right.
then the dust coats your components, which leads it to overheating because it can't cool it enough. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, what we recommend is every 6 months or so, you know, vacuum the dust out.
Right. Dust is a great insulator.
Yep.
Oh. Keeps all that heat in.
And I have my dust bunny case back.
Yes, you do.
Plus, I've been starting up a new one. Oh, I got some gross dust out of one machine. Heavy smoker.
Oh.
In case you folks don't know, what I'm talking about is you got to think of a computer, besides being a great tool, is like a huge vacuum cleaner.
It's a set of lungs.
It's designed to suck the air in from the front and blow it out the back. Normally, you've got your power supply on the back end, and quite often now the newer machines, because they got to move so much air, they have like 4-inch muffin fans on the front and back. So it's pulling it in and blowing it out, and that is a lot of dirt.
And I know people who smoke at the computer, and that pulls the smoke in through the front of the machine and out through the back. But as you know, when smoke comes in contact with any surface, it deposits some nicotine on that surface. So I've seen machines that were opened up that were full of yellow gunk on them. It was terrible. All right, our next
pet hair is also a pet hair is nasty huge. One too.
Our next caller is it Brut?
Bert.
Bert.
I'm sorry.
Oh, I see. That's B-U-R-T, not B-R-U-T. All right, Bert. Hey, Bert.
Hello, guys. Great show, as
remember,
always.
I control the board.
I understand that. Where are you calling from, Bert?
Palmyra.
Elmira, New York.
Palmyra.
Oh, Palmyra, New York. All right.
Yeah, not that far. was just wondering if any of you guys ever run an actual Linux tutorial at your shops.
That's an excellent question. I don't think either of those guys do.
Mm-hmm.
But
really.
There is Lugor, the Linux Users Group of Rochester, L-U-G-O-R, at lugor.org.
Right.
And they are they're a local user group.
Third
and they meet
Thursday of the month, which is this coming Thursday.
Right, this Thursday, November 18th at RIT.
Dr. Peter Anderson, Professor Emeritus of RIT, will be giving a presentation on J.
Right.
What the heck is J?
It's a language like C
like
or
A, B,
D.
C, D. Yeah, right. I know
it
C.
It comes after I?
So when I was in college, we were looking at C as a future language that might be used sometime.
Yeah.
So we've skipped
K.
D, E, F, G, H, I, and we're on J now.
So I would suggest you, it looks like they're at the Barnes & Noble bookstore. Is that what they're saying here? Interesting. The idea is go to the meeting and you can talk to some people and see what they've got in the way of stuff for newbies. I know they've got a newbie discussion list, but if you're that much of a newbie, you don't know how to get on the discussion list. So show up at the meeting and ask them, and they'll help you out.
What's Chris's beginning Unix group?
And Chris has Kopecky.
There, yeah.
Hold on. I'll get you there in a minute. It's on the Soundbites calendar.
They meet at Panera Bread at 12 Corners, and we're looking up what day it is.
That's on the calendar. The Soundbites calendar has stuff on it. Lepecky. There's a Lepecky meeting every Monday night at 6:30. They meet at 12 Corners in Panera Bread. Therefore, I'm sure they'd be more than happy to help you out and talk to you about stuff.
Okay. What I'm trying to get at is kind of a hands-on teaching session or two or three, where, for instance, I could bring my desktop box with me.
The Linux groups have build nights every so often where they do that. You bring in your PC and they help you build everything through it.
Huh, okay. All righty. Because I've got Ubuntu on board, had what looks like maybe a crash of some sort, can't get out of the black screen command line boot up.
Right.
And, you know, I've been to the Ubuntu online groups and all that. It just takes forever, and I'm not familiar enough to follow along with some of the stuff the guys throw out on those things, and it gets kind of frustrating.
Yeah. Well, definitely check out Lepecky at Panera Bread Monday night, and then Thursday night at the Barnes & Noble, I think. You folks from the Linux Users Group,
Building
your
70.
Website sucks. I got to be completely honest with you.
At
your
top,
website is complete and utter crap.
At the top of the website, it says Building 70, Room 1400. And at the bottom of the website, it says Barnes & Noble.
So I don't know what's going on here. You people need to do something somewhere, something. Somewhere, God love you, good luck, find the Linux Users Group meeting and go there.
Bye.
Thanks. That's my mini rant. Fix your website. The next meeting will be held on November 18th. Really? Where? It doesn't say where.
It says usually at.
Usually at. I get usually. I do. I really get usually. But it can't hurt you to say where the actual meeting is going to be. And today is the 14th. If you don't know where the meeting is going to be on the 18th by now, then there's a problem somewhere. So somebody needs to update the website. Sorry, my rant for the day. All right, that music tells me we're done. We're done for another day. I want to thank each and every one of you who called in today. I particularly want to thank Dolores, who upped her membership. So thank you all very much. We had a dozen of you call in today, and we're delighted to see that. Please join us next week. Definitely download the podcast. I want to hear from people who heard us on the iPhone. Tune in on the iPhone or your Droid next week. We'll be back next week with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, celebrating 20 years.